Welcome to the Side Action Podcast, the sports gambling show that covers everything in the world of sports betting from A through Z. We'll cover the four major sports, as well as anything and everything in between worth some action, and we'll increase the size of your bankroll. And here we go.
All right, welcome to the Side Action, episode 16. This is Jim Weglars, a.k.a. Wegs. You can follow me at Wegspool on Twitter.
And this is Steve Action Roberts. You can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
Follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. So tell me about the Bulls game Friday night, Steve.
Great time. I had a couple of friends score some first-row tickets behind the Bulls bench versus the Thunder on Friday night, and we went over there, had some pregame dinner at Queenie's Supper Lounge.
Nice.
This new restaurant that just opened up in the concourse overlooks the Jordan statue. Mm-hmm. It's pretty sick. And went down to our seats, and the Bulls jumped on them early, which was great for me. I had the Bulls in the first quarter.
Good
winner,
for you.
Winner. And then the Thunder came back and battled back a little bit in the third quarter, and then Chicago pulled it out in the end.
Wow, a big win. The Bulls stink. Obviously, they fired their coach this past week, Fred Hoiberg. But then they got housed on Saturday, so you got the good win.
Yeah, thankfully I was on the right night of the weekend with the Bulls. Markkanen was pretty good, mm-hmm. and I was impressed with Zach LaVine, too. Both mm-hmm. those guys can really play.
Yeah, it seems like they're going to be free to do whatever they want, although I heard that they're kind of revolting right now. They don't even want to mm-hmm. show up for practice for Jim Boylan, but what are you going to do? It's going to be a long year for the Bulls.
Yeah, Sacramento Kings in town tonight. It's going to be very interesting to see how they play.
Kings favored on the road at the Bulls tonight. Mm-hmm. They're not a great team, but they're actually better than the Bulls, I think. So,
how was your weekend?
Well, I was telling you before the podcast, I went to the Magic Lounge. I was very excited. It's up in Andersonville. It's this kind of like speakeasy feel place. You got to go through a laundromat to get to the actual venue. And they have house magicians that do all sorts of stuff. And then they had a signature act, guys that have been on, I guess, a TV show for Penn & Teller called Fool Them or Fool Us. And it was great. It was really fun. It was kind of a late night. It was 10 o'clock show that it started till, you know, a little past midnight. It was a good time.
Yeah. Did you show your date any magic tricks late night?
That goes off the air, but maybe, perhaps. But no, it was a great time. And also saw a great play at Steppenwolf this weekend. My mom works there, as you know, and it's called Familiar. From the playwright, who she's actually in Black Panther. She's the head general, Danny Aguilera, who's also on The Walking Dead. She's a playwright. She's super talented. And it was a funny but poignant topic about kind of the assimilation of the Zimbabwean family in the United States and kind of running the two cultures together, the American and the Zimbabwean culture. So it was really cool. Really cool play.
Wow, lots of arts for you this weekend. Huh?
That's right. But from a betting perspective, you know, 3-1 in the NFL. Got the fourth game or fifth game tonight. I've got Seattle -3. Hopefully it comes through for a 4-1 weekend. You had a monster day yesterday, I understand.
Yeah, great weekend for me. On Saturday, I was killing it in college basketball, too. Saturday ended up really big. And then yesterday, probably had one of my best days of the year. Absolutely monstrous.
And you also won the Mahar Pool.
Yeah, Mahar Pool winner. And then I capped it off with a Chicago Bears money line ticket last night.
This guy is on fire. Look out. Can't stand next to this guy. So, good job. Well, let's review the pod. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. First of all, we'll go over our recap head-to-head. Newsflash, Action had another big week. He's caught me. We'll do our takeaways from the NFL from week 14. We will jump ahead a little bit of college bowl for football a little bit. There's a couple bowls this coming Saturday on the 15th. We'll talk about the Heisman Trophy and how that kind of shook out. We'll get into the NFL, talk about some key injuries, update the index, and look at our situational spots. And then you got a little segment on the Women's World Cup for soccer. That's good to know. And then we'll talk about college hoops, both some information about the games from last week, a little bit about our reviews and indices, and then we'll talk about our spots for this week, which is a little bit tough because we have to project the lines for this because we can't do it all for 1 week. But we'll talk about it, and then finally we'll do our head-to-head on the week. That sounds like everything, right?
Yeah, got a great episode. Let's jump right in.
All right, sounds good. All right, well, let's start off with the head-to-head. Well, I was leading before this week by 2, and unfortunately got swept. It wasn't a good week for Jimmy Weggs, but we'll get back on the horse. I think I'm being led to water sometimes in these picks, but let's start off on basketball. We talked about Nebraska at Minnesota. Minnesota was getting 3 at home. You were all over Minnesota in this one. I was trying to make a point that Nebraska was playing good basketball and they got to win these big games on the road, but unfortunately they didn't bring it. They lost 85-78 at the Gophers.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the game, but throughout the first 30 minutes, it looked like Nebraska was going to be the right side. They were right. Absolutely dominating Minnesota, and I was out playing trivia and thought that you had a winner for sure. And I was happy that I didn't end up actually betting on Minnesota, but then they came back in the end. Amir Coffey had a game-high 32 points, mm-hmm. career-high 32 points, and Jordan Murphy added 18 and 13 rebounds as they came back to win 85-78.
Yeah, that was a good one for you. And we'll see. I mean, it's early in the season. These metrics are, we're trying to figure it out. I'm trying to figure it out myself. So nice one there. The other game in college basketball was actually during all the football on Sunday. Tennessee and Gonzaga were playing. Gonzaga was favored by 4. This was a neutral site game, right? This is a Talking Stick in Arizona.
Yeah, they played in Phoenix.
And so Gonzaga, who's in a lot of indexes, they're number one. I mean, they're a really good team. They're actually missing players. They're missing Tilly. They're missing another player. But they were winning this game. I checked it somewhere in the, third quarter or something, one of the games, and I was like, oh, they're up by 8 or 9. I'm good with this. And then I checked in the final minute, and Admiral Schofield's, like, hitting threes and making it happen. They take the lead, and they end up winning the game 76-73.
Yeah, it was awesome. I had it on my second screen yesterday, watching there in the recliner, and Tennessee was really battling hard. It was a physical game, which I kind of expected. Tennessee is a very physical team,
right?
And Gonzaga, at least in my mind, plays a little bit more of a fluid type of basketball.
Sure.
And Tennessee really took it to them. Grant Williams, their player of the year for the Volunteers, fouled out with 2.5 minutes left, but as you mentioned, the Admiral took over he busted probably 3 3-pointers in a row, and they ended up winning the game. It was an epic win for the Volunteers.
It's a good sign for Tennessee that they can win a big game like that. In the past, you know, Barnes, I'm not a big fan of his coaching style, but he does really attract good talent. He usually gets them pretty, you know, in a good seat in the tournament. We'll see how they do later in the year. But it's a good sign for them, and it's winning a big game, and the SEC is loaded, so it'll be fun.
Yeah, they've got to be the favorites in the SEC now with Kentucky not playing very well.
Absolutely.
Next weekend, they play Memphis in a rivalry game, and then Gonzaga plays at number 14, North Carolina.
Exactly. I think we're going to talk about that in the head-to-head, right?
Yep.
All right, onto the NFL now. The two games were first. This was your, you know, you're very happy about this one, I'm sure. The Colts were at Houston. Houston were 4.5-point favorites. They'd won 9 straight. The Colts had won 5 straight before the kind of hiccup at Jacksonville last week or the week before. And I thought that Houston would keep it rolling. I mean, metrically, they're better than the Colts. But Andrew Luck, he lit them up. Almost 400 yards passing. And they were actually in control this game the whole time. It wasn't really that close. Mm-hmm. Houston made a push as they would, and they ended up losing 24-21.
Yeah, I was all over this game yesterday. It was another one of my big winners and a money line winner as well. They just couldn't hold down T.Y. Hilton. He mm-hmm. seems to own that stadium at NRG. He had another huge day, 199 receiving yards. And Andrew Luck, as you mentioned, had 400 and 2 touchdowns in the win. Next week, Indianapolis has a big game against Dallas.
Huge game.
Houston Texans face the Jets. So that should be interesting.
They're on the road at the Jets. Maybe we'll see what happens. The last game that you won, again, was the Falcons at Green Bay. Your handicap was pretty much right on. The Packers were 6-point favorites in our head-to-head. I think that line actually drifted down after mm-hmm. we talked. But no, the Packers came out ready to play. They were emotionally charged, and obviously, you know, Rodgers played great. The defense played a lot better than they've done in the past. The Falcons didn't look like they were ready to play in the cold, and they were actually getting crushed in this game. They made it a little bit closer, closing the game 34-20, but really the game was in hand in the first half.
Yeah, the line drifted down to 4 before kickoff, as you had mentioned, which made me a little bit nervous mm-hmm. to see that money coming in on Atlanta, but my handicap stuck with it. Aaron Rodgers wasn't really as incredible as I expected that he would be. Mm-hmm. But as you mentioned, the defense showed up yesterday, even had a pick 6 against Matt Ryan that they helped the Packers to the victory.
That's right. He's also on my fantasy team. He kind of screwed me with that one. All right. We transition to our takeaways for the NFL in week 14. First of all, the side action picks went 6-1, another big week. And, you know, I'm telling you, this index is working.
The Weggs index is hot. I'm trying to lend a little bit of hand here and there. I think we were both on the Browns yesterday, too.
Yep.
that Baker Mayfield-led offense is just dynamic as ever. And got to say, that new offensive coordinator, Kitchens, is really designing some great plays for the Browns offense.
I understand it's basically a college offense. It's really running it more like Baker's offense in college. So they're fitting the scheme, and it's working. And they're really playing just more complimentary football. Their defense is playing pretty well. And so, yeah, they got the big win. I didn't need the teaser, as we talked about before the pod, but one thing I noted is that the NFL is so unpredictable. I mean, it's ridiculous. We had a lot of home dogs win outright. We had Oakland win. Obviously, Miami, we'll talk in a minute, the crazy play at the end. San Francisco won. They beat Denver, who was seemingly prepared for a playoff run. You mentioned Cleveland, and then the Bears straight up beat the Rams at home. So basically, if you were a home dog, you came out a winner.
Yeah, imagine if you parlayed all those home underdogs yesterday on the money line.
Did you see what they said? No. On Twitter, they said if you did that, at least, I don't know if the Bears were in there, but if it was a $100 parlay and you did money line, at least on the first four I mentioned, Oakland, Miami, San Francisco, and Cleveland, you would have won $87,000.
Wow, that would be an awesome payday.
Next time, I'll try that. But so this miracle in Miami, I mean, there were a couple things about this play. If you didn't see the game, the Patriots were winning the entire game. I think from start to finish, they were winning. They did have a weird play at the end of the first half where you never see that the Patriots screw up time of the clock, but they did. Brady got sacked, and they didn't even get any points on the board at the end of the first half. They also settled for a field goal late to set up the final play. And then it was like 7 seconds to go, and Miami was at their own 30. They put in kind of like the hands team for the Hail Mary, including Gronk in the back end. And instead, Miami ran the hook and ladder play where they kind of throw the ball out 15 yards and start doing a bunch of laterals. And Kenyon Drake went the distance, and Gronk fell on his face trying to tackle him. It was insane. I heard, at least on VSiN this morning, that one play, because it killed so many money line parlays for New England, that was like hundreds of thousands of dollars changed hands on that play.
Yeah, and New England was a huge teaser leg, too. Mm-hmm. A lot of professional players were on that side and closing out their teasers. So the greatest thing that I saw yesterday was Gronkowski trying to make that tackle and just falling on his ass.
Falling on his face.
It was classic.
It was horrible.
As a Colts fan, that really warmed my heart.
I bet it did. But what that means is, I mean, them losing that game, it really just opens it up. I mean, the Chiefs, I guess we'll go into that one. The Chiefs had a great game as well. They end up winning, but before we get into that game specifically, I mean, that knocks them out of the potential of the top seed for New England. So it's a horrible loss, really, to be honest with you. So it's a really big play. I guess we'll roll into that one, the Ravens and Chiefs game. We called this one. The Ravens kept it close. Actually should have probably won the game outright. But Mahomes, man, he just made plays. I don't know if you saw that no-look pass.
Yeah, incredible. I was watching that video over and over again.
Plus, on 4th and 9, on the final drive, he's rolling to his right. He's got three guys chasing him. He whips it across over his shoulder, and out of nowhere, you know, Tyreek Hill just blasts through, catches the ball, and, you know, like a 30-yard gain. That was just critical play, and they converted another fourth down on the goal line to score the touchdown, to basically tie the game, right? That was crazy.
Can you believe Tyreek Hill in there in that situation? He was basically hobbling across the field and just went all out to make that catch.
Yeah,
incredible.
He's a warrior, man. He's a warrior. And then, obviously, Lamar Jackson fumbles the ball in the next series, and then Kansas City misses the field goal to win the game, so it goes to OT. And I was sitting there, you know, I had teased up the total up to 59, so I think I was safe, but I know a lot of people, like you were talking about, that 53 total was coming into play if there was a touchdown.
Definitely in jeopardy. When Jackson fumbled there and then the Chiefs missed the field goal, I thought for sure my under was toast as the Chiefs would go in and score a touchdown. But thankfully, they just stuck to the field goal and the under cashed.
Exactly. Sets up a huge game on Thursday night. The Chiefs are going to play the Chargers at home. Essentially, those are the two best teams in the AFC right now by record, and the winner of that is going to probably have the number one seed. So we'll see how that plays out.
How about your Bears last night, even though you couldn't trust them?
I couldn't trust them, man. I honestly had this bad feeling. You were texting me. You're like, what do you think about this? And I'm like, I don't know. I thought the Rams were going to come in and roll them, but the Bears' defense was completely dominant in this game. They stuffed Gurley 28 yards rushing or something. Goff was terrible. He obviously can't play in the cold. I mean, he looked like he needed earmuffs or something out there. He was just freezing. And I mean, despite Trubisky had 3 turnovers as well, he was terrible as well. But the Bears ran for over 170 yards. And that's how you beat good offensive teams, I guess.
Yeah, finally Jordan Howard got going last night. And like you mentioned, that defense was incredible. Four interceptions of Goff, and they just couldn't move the ball. I think you and I were texting at some point, and I was thinking about hedging back on LA. And then I said to myself, there's no way they're going to score 9 points before this game is over. And
exactly.
Sure enough, it was a 15-6 final.
So the Rams had scored, the lowest total on the year was 23 points. They scored six. It's just insane. So, and that 15, the final score is 15-6. That included a safety. It was like the first drive for the Rams in the second half. The last game of note was the Cowboys. They're playing the Eagles. This was the Eagles' last chance to try to take control of the division again. But the Cowboys really own this team. They had over 570 yards of offense in the game. But Dak Prescott kept turning the ball over, like left and right. But luckily, Amari Cooper, man, that I got to be honest with you, I wasn't exactly for the trade, mainly for the compensation. But for the Cowboys, it's worked out. I mean, they have been undefeated since the trade. He had three touchdowns, over 200 yards receiving, and that crazy last play. Did you see that? Where it was a tip ball, and then and that was an overtime.
Yeah.
Tip ball.
That crazy. One got you to the window. I know you had the Cowboys minus 3.5.
It did. I did. I needed it. So that tip ball, you know, there was an interesting discussion. I wanted to, we don't have to go too much into it, but so what would have happened if the Cowboys did run the clock down that first drive of overtime? They took a full 8 minutes to do to get that score. They were talking on the broadcast that they could run the clock all the way down and kick the field goal to win the game, but I thought both teams got a chance to possess the ball.
Not if the clock runs out, as far as I understand it. Okay. Field goal would be good. Now they may have to kick off.
Okay,
That's one rule I'm not sure about, but
it didn't come to fruition, but it was interesting. So the Cowboys, man, they're in control too. They got their division, and they're really just one game behind the Bears in that, you know, for the three seed in the NFC.
And how about the Pittsburgh Steelers going on the road and losing to the poor Oakland Raiders? What a demoralizing loss. And now they're only one half game lead over the Ravens for the division.
They could actually fall out of the playoffs potentially, which is kind of crazy to even think about because this team's so talented. But they actually host the Patriots this week, and then they go to the Saints the following week.
Wow.
They could have seven losses. And I'm telling you, there's teams like the Ravens, obviously, who are on there for the division, but you got the Colts that are right there. Mm-hmm. You've got the Titans. I mean, even Miami's 7-6 now. So they're all kind of chomping at the bit. The NFL is always like this, though. It's just, it comes down to the wire and they play it on the field, which is awesome. Well, let's transition a little bit to college football. Let's just kind of go over the last game of the year and then a couple of bowl spots we're eyeing for this week. Army and Navy, you called it. Definitely hit the under. Final score was 17-10. The Army winning. What did you see in that game?
For those of you who missed it, good for you. It was pretty freaking boring. Army was dominant, as I expected. But Navy had some offense themselves on the ground, and they kept it close all day. It actually pushed on the closing number of Army minus 7. But I was glad to cash my under ticket and move on with my life.
They also had some crazy 10-minute review on a first down play that just was kind of ridiculous. But that kind of held things up. But yeah, it's kind of fun seeing that game. You watch it and you see all the cadets and the midshipmen or whatever they are in the crowd. It's pretty
fun. I was way more into the college hoops on Saturday afternoon. Marquette and Wisconsin had my attention.
Nice. All right, so this week you've got a couple of bowl games. We've noted three of them here. You really like North Texas this week. They're getting 9 points versus Utah State, one of our darlings. They're playing in the New Mexico Bowl on Saturday the 15th. Why do you like them?
Yeah, I had a chance to dig into this one a little bit more over the weekend, and North Texas is ranked 31st in the S&P Plus, where Utah State is only 21. Not that much of a difference. And the strength of schedule is nearly equal as well, 130th for North Texas and 128 for Utah State. I know they did play that Michigan State game early on in the year, but beyond that, they haven't really faced anyone formidable. And the S&P Plus has this margin as a 3-point spread, and I'm going to take the 9 points with North Texas. There's been some reverse line movement, too, in this one where 56% of the bets have been on Utah State, but the line has gone down from 11 to the current number of 9. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading the line move, I'm looking at these numbers a little bit, and I'm going to take the mean green.
All right. I think you're right. The line move, I believe, is because Utah State coach Matt Wells is going to Texas Tech. And it's so weird with these teams, you know, when they get these jobs, and I get why it happens, but they leave their team. So, you know, he was the guy who was driving this ship. He really turned this program around. there's probably going to be a letdown. And they also, you know, they didn't win the big game to get to a bigger bowl. So I like your angle on this one for sure. The next game is Fresno State against Arizona State in the Las Vegas Bowl, also on Saturday. Fresno's a four-point favorite right now. I like Fresno quite a bit. I think they're a better team than Arizona State. Also, Arizona State is, I believe, their best wide receiver is not going to play in the game. There's several players that aren't playing in these bowl games.
And Keel Harry announced that he's out.
Oh, boy. So it's just one of these things. It's just kind of a shame. We talked about this in the last pod. I just think that one way or another, it's not that they can make him play the games, but it just diminishes the value of the bowls because these are based on matchups from the regular season. So I basically like Fresno. I think they're playing for something because they won their, they obviously want to show up in the final poll, and I think they're going to beat this Arizona State team.
Yep, I definitely concur. I was looking at the numbers, and the Sun Devils are ranked 20th in rushing offense, so that's where they're looking to have their success. And the Fresno State Bulldogs rank 5th in S&P Plus rushing defense. So they're set up to stop the Arizona State rushing attack, and I think that they're going to have some success there on Saturday.
Okay. The last game of note, I'm not saying I'm going to bet this one. I'll probably bet the Fresno one. But Appalachian State is 7-point favorites against Middle Tennessee State in the New Orleans Bowl. That's also Saturday, 12:15. Right now, I mean, the S&P Plus already has a margin of 13 points, but I'm not sure. I think the App State coach is moving on too, right?
Yep.
So it's just one of these things. I'm going to stay away from this. We saw Middle Tennessee play really well at the end of the season. App State's been great all year. They've been basically an S&P Plus darling, but I'm not sure the impact of the coach on this one.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be staying away from this one in terms of the spread bet. But for those of you who are in bowl pick'em pools, I really do like App State to win this game outright. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about laying 7 points, though.
Right. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Heisman Trophy. So we talked a little bit last week about the odds and how it switched to Kyler Murray versus Tua Tagovailoa and, you know, Haskins and stuff. And that came to fruition. I mean, Murray ended up closing out, and he won it. And I guess it wasn't even close in the voting, which is surprising to me.
Yeah, it was just a crazy flipping on this. Kyler Murray ended up closing at minus 300 after he was a plus money underdog throughout the season. Mm-hmm. And it was just crazy to me how Tua flipped that quickly in just a matter of 7 days.
Yeah, to me, it's kind of like I get it. It's recency bias. And I know that Murray does have a lot of numbers. But don't you remember that Tua never even played in the fourth quarter except for like 3 games all season? Mm-hmm. I mean, he could have lit up. We could have exceeded Murray's numbers easily. Plus, his team is number one. And Tua is, I don't know, he got hurt in that last game. It's not like he was playing terribly just because he was playing badly. So.
Yeah. Another thing I heard this week is, and something I didn't consider, is every single former Heisman Trophy winner gets a vote. And there's been like 10 or 11 Oklahoma Sooners who've won trophies. Now, not that 10 or 11 votes makes a huge difference, but I think just the wave of Oklahoma bias and West Coast bias probably pushed Murray over the top.
Hmm. One of the things to note is now you've got Lincoln Riley, the coach who has back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners. He should probably get an offer in the NFL this year.
I have a feeling he's going to end up on an NFL sideline somewhere. Just a matter of which team he takes over.
That's right. All right, let's look ahead in the NFL for Week 15. We're going to skip the net yards per play index this week. I'll just kind of quickly go over the NFL, the WEGS index. Not too much different. The Bears and Saints are tied at number one now in the index. The Chargers at 3, Rams drop to 4, and the Texans are 5. So not fundamentally different with the Ravens and Patriots behind. So pretty similar to what it was last week, but the Saints did jump up to tie the Bears.
If the Bears and Saints were to face each other on a neutral field, who do you think would have your spread edge?
I still think I'd give it to the Saints mainly because of Drew Brees. What I saw out of Trubisky, I know he was coming back and rusty this past week, but if the game comes down to making a play at the end, you got to trust Brees. And I think that's actually the difference between the three top teams right now in the NFC. You saw Goff, he folded under the pressure. Trubisky played like crap as well against a decent pressure defense. The Saints have the edge. I mean, they have the better quarterback, and they have a running game, and their defense is playing up to speed. So I do like the Saints there. I think that you've seen over the course of the weeks where the Saints weren't even in the top five for a long time. They're playing better and better, especially defensively, and they're basically matched up with the Bears evenly in the index, and I think that's what would happen. What about you?
Excellent point. If you throw Prescott into that mix, it's clear that the Saints have –
the class of the NFC in terms of quarterback play.
You do.
Now, I will caveat that and say that I think Sean McVay probably could carry his team over the top in some situations. Mm-hmm. It's clear that he has a mind for calling offense, and some of their innovation on the offensive side of the ball has been remarkable this year. Mm-hmm. I think you and I spoke earlier that it was interesting that it didn't seem like he had any of that innovation last night against the Bears. And agreed. I wonder personally if he was holding back a little bit forward thinking that he might face Chicago in the playoffs.
It's possible, and I, you know, you brought that up before the pod. I can see that. I mean, it makes sense. It did seem a little vanilla last night. They even noted on the broadcast they didn't run a lot of jet motion against them, mm-hmm. which is kind of a hallmark of the McVay offense. I also thought that not only, okay, they kind of abandoned the run like I had mentioned, but to me they didn't have any counter runs. It was just a weird game plan. They just tried to run straight at the Bears, which you're not going to do, and then you're going to have Goff just drop back and try to throw in tight windows. I don't know. You're probably right. They probably are holding something back.
Well, it also should be mentioned that Chicago has a very speedy linebacking core.
They
Roquan Smith and Leonard Floyd, those guys can get sideline to sideline. So maybe mm-hmm. McVay just figured that they wouldn't have success running those plays.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. It'll play out because right now, yeah, they'd be the 2 seed, the Rams and the Bears 3. So, all right, let's look at the injuries from this week. Odell Beckham didn't play. He had a quad injury. He didn't suit up on Sunday. I mean, they still won handily.
Really bizarre, though, wasn't it? I mean, Saturday morning, it comes out that OBJ is going to sit on Sunday.
I don't know.
I've got him in two fantasy squads, and thankfully I had buys this weekend. But I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who were pretty pissed off that OBJ wasn't on the field.
Especially in that matchup, and they destroyed Washington. So we'll see. Hopefully it was just something minor that he can be back this week. Roethlisberger has a rib injury. He actually left the game on Sunday against Oakland. He did return. I can't see him missing the game. But we don't have a line on that game because of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was bizarre too. Roethlisberger was out for like the entire third quarter, and Joshua Dobbs came in, and I think I heard he had a 12 passer rating on Sunday, which was considerably higher than Mark Sanchez, but still pretty bad.
I heard Dobbs actually got injured. I think that's why Roethlisberger came back in or something like that. So
okay, interesting. I must have missed that.
Yeah, but Dobbs wasn't good. I mean, and they had made Mason Rudolph inactive for the game, so they only had those two quarterbacks to go to war with. So Tyreek Hill, as you noted, was hobbling around in the game against Baltimore. His heel was injured, and obviously he's a cheetah. He's the fastest guy around. If he's slower, that could have a big impact on the big game against the Chargers.
Yeah, I saw Schefter tweeted this afternoon that he is expected to play, mm-hmm. according to head coach Andy Reid. But I've personally injured my heel before playing soccer, and that can really, really be painful. And although I'm sure these guys are obviously NFL players, they'll doctor him up so that he'll probably won't feel it on Sunday. But he's certainly going to be hobbled a little bit. Excuse me. Thursday night, even shorter week, facing the Chargers. So I think you and I both like the Chargers, and we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Okay. The last injury of note is Austin Eckler for the Chargers. Again, on that short week, he had a stinger. We'll see. He's not in the concussion protocol, although he said he was dizzy. It's kind of confusing. Mm-hmm. He told the press that he's feeling dizzy, but he'll probably play. I understand if you're in the concussion protocol, you can't talk to the press, so he's not in there.
Correct.
All right, so which spots do you like this week in the NFL, Steve?
Well, I was looking at the lines as they came up yesterday afternoon, and the first one that jumped out to me was Indianapolis hosting Dallas this week. They opened as a 3-point favorite, and it's clear that they have all to play for as they're right in the thick of the AFC wildcard picture. Mm-hmm. And they're looking to stay pace with the Ravens, the Dolphins, the Titans, and the Steelers. Mm-hmm. Prescott was pretty unimpressive yesterday for most of the game, I think you and I talked about. And it's clear that this Cowboys offense is going to continue to revolve around Ezekiel Elliott and that running game. They're 11th in rushing offense DVOA. But quietly, this Colts defense has been great against the run all year, ranking 4th against the run and DVOA. And I think that they're going to have some success in stopping Zeke, which is going to make the Cowboys a little bit one-dimensional. And obviously, they got to stop Cooper, but I think they will, and the Colts should win this one pretty comfortably.
Okay. Just a little disclaimer, since this is a podcast, my co-host here, Action, has his Colts shirt on right now. Indianapolis Colts on, so you knew he was going to go there. You know I love the Cowboys. They've been rolling. They've won 5 straight. Actually, this is a stay-away game for me. This line is 3 points. I mean, that's exactly what it should be in my mind when I look at my index analysis. to me, the game is going to boil down to, can Indianapolis run on Dallas? You got to beat Dallas by running the ball because the defense is so fast. You can't just drop back and throw. Now, granted, they got Andrew Luck. He's amazing. Hilton's been great, although he keeps getting dinged up, it seems. I think this game definitely is under. You noted that. Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%. The 47 seems under. And obviously, Dallas usually possesses the ball. So it's going to be a really good game. If the line scoots up a little bit higher than that three, that key number, maybe 3.5 or 4, I may go in on Dallas, but right now I'm staying away.
Yeah, I think before we logged on here, you and I noted that there's a couple of books at 2.5 right now too, exactly. So even more value on the Colts. One other point I wanted to add is on the other side of the ball, I think Indianapolis is going to have some success on third downs. Mm-hmm. They're second in the league in third down conversion at 47%, and Dallas is only 26th in third down defensive success at 41%. So I think the Colts are going to be able to stay on the field, negating that Zeke running attack even more.
It's key. It's key. All right, the big Thursday night matchup we've already alluded to a couple times. The Chargers are going to Kansas City. The Chargers are getting 3.5 points on the road. For me, I'll give you my analysis before we turn to actions information. There's a couple of factors that play into me. First of all, when you play a team like the Ravens, Baltimore Ravens are physical. They beat you up. Obviously, you've got the Tyreek Hill injury, but I mean, they're going to beat you up all game long. It went into an extra quarter, so basically for 5 quarters. Kansas City's coming into this short week, so typically when teams play against Baltimore, those physical teams, they're not going to be quite as frisky. And I see with the short week, then that really hurts Kansas City in that high-powered attack. So that's why I like the points here. As well as the Chargers, they should be getting Melvin Gordon back. He should be fresh. His knee should be at least in a good spot. I think that those two factors really sway towards the Chargers. Now, there's a lot of numbers that are against us here, action. Mm-hmm. One of them is like, I think it's Thursday night favorites or something, or home favorites are like 13-0 or something in this game, in the last game. So it's hard to fight against that, but I agree with you. I like the Chargers in this game.
I love the use of the term frisky. That's a handicap I haven't heard in a while, but I think you're spot on. Playing against the Ravens in that physical matchup, that's something that I didn't even consider in this. Mm-hmm. Going against the Ravens takes a toll on your body. As we can see, Tyreek Hill is now banged up, and there's certainly a lot of injuries to monitor in this game. Eckler's status, Melvin Gordon, as you mentioned too. Mm-hmm. But as you noted, the Thursday night play on the road team has not been great this year.
Right.
However, I think that this Chargers offense is set up to have some really good success against the Chiefs D, and that's where I expect they'll be able to keep this thing within the number. I'll add too, as I'm looking here, some of the books look like they're trending towards 3. So if you have interest in betting on the Chargers, I would recommend getting in there early. Make sure you get that hook.
Yeah, the hook is key, definitely. The next game of note is the Saints. They're giving 6.5 points at the Panthers. To me, the Panthers are done. I don't know what to say. This team has now lost 6 straight games. They were 6-2. They're 6-7 now. They come home. I mean, they have slim playoff hopes, so they could have a rallying effort, you know, for Riverboat Ron, but for some reason, I think they've quit on him. And the Saints are playing really good football. They're playing on the road as good as at home. And I just kind of expect the Saints to keep the foot on the gas pedal to stay ahead of the Rams in the home field advantage race.
Yeah, for me, I understand your handicap. And I agree that I certainly can't be betting on the Panthers. But the home divisional dog is just an angle that I always look for, especially late in the season. And it's going to be hard for me to look at laying that many points with the Saints offense. I know they're one of the best in the league, and they can certainly blow out anyone at any time. That comeback on Sunday was impressive against Tampa Bay.
It was.
Where they covered another home divisional dog. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's just a stay away. I might look to the under in this one, being a late-year divisional game. Mm-hmm. But staying off the Saints.
All right. The next game I like, the Rams are hosting the Eagles. The Rams are 9-point favorites. It's a big number. But for me, it's a Rams bounce-back spot. I don't see the Rams folding up 2 weeks in a row offensively. Plus, you look to see what Dallas did against this Eagles defense. Almost 600 yards of offense. They ran the ball. They threw the ball. They did anything they want against them. The Eagles are going to go all the way across country. It's going to be a primetime game. Maybe they'll stand up, but I think this is going to be a girly show, and I'm going to lay those 9 points and take the Rams.
Yeah, I like this one too. And I'll add too, it's a very big benefit here for the Rams to be playing a second consecutive game on Sunday night where they get that little bit of added rest in after they've been traveling so much the last few weeks. I think that they'll be looking forward to getting back home and they should be able to cover this number. I agree with you.
The last game, it's not exactly a sexy game. It's the Giants are playing at home against the Titans. The Titans actually are a road dog here. Their Giants are 2.5-point favorites at home. And obviously the Titans are in the playoff race. It's crazy for me to say this because the Giants looked terrible a few weeks ago. But I think the Giants are actually playing really good football right now. And obviously Odell coming back would help this. But they're playing better defense, and Saquon Barkley is just lighting it up. This guy's incredible. The Titans, I just don't think that they played great against the Jags at home, but I don't know. I think the Jags kind of gave up on their season, especially after the first quarter. Mm-hmm. So I actually like the Giants at home. It's kind of crazy. It feels weird to make this pick.
Definitely an interesting spot. The Giants are seemingly giving away draft picks every time they go out and win a game. But I agree with you. Their offense has been playing a lot better of late, and Saquon Barkley is just an absolute beast right now. He went off again yesterday, and I think they should be able to have some success against the Titans. Of course, as you mentioned, Tennessee is still in the thick of the playoff race, so they're going to be playing tough too. Probably a game I'll stay away from personally.
All right. Okay, well, let's transition again. Now let's talk about the Women's World Cup odds, which I guess you found at the Westgate in Vegas. What do you have to say about that action?
Yeah, I'm not flying out there to bet on this quite yet because I think you have to be in Nevada to bet at the Westgate. So
that's right.
But I saw this pop up yesterday on my news feed, and I thought it would be something that would be interesting to talk about. A new sport here for us on the Side Action Pod.
Sure.
The Women's World Cup. USA is the defending champions, and they've opened as the clear favorite here at 2-1 odds, followed by the home team, France, at 7-2, and then Germany comes in third at 5-1, followed by a slew of nations, Japan, England, and the Netherlands at 10-1, and Brazil 16-1, Sweden 20-1, and Spain and Australia round out the top 10 at 25-1 each.
Well, all I can say is, you know, unlike the men's team, the women's team is dominant. I mean, they just are incredible. I remember last World Cup, they played great. My daughter plays soccer, so she's into that, as you are. And they play such a great brand of soccer. It's fun to watch. It's interesting to see France is 7-2. Are they traditionally a strong team in the international play for women, or is it just because of the home?
I think it's the home aspect. The Women's World Cup started in 1991, and there's been four winners of the Women's World Cup: USA, Japan, Germany, and Norway. Okay. So France has obviously never won, but I think you're spot on. Their odds suggest that they could have some success on home soil.
Gotcha. And Japan, U.S. beat Japan last time, right?
Yeah, and that 5-0 final, might have been 5-1.
I still remember that kick from like half field over that goalie's head.
Carly Lloyd with an epic World Cup final
she's
goal.
She's awesome. But yeah, so I mean, obviously the odds on favor U.S., but maybe a team like Japan because they have longer odds. I mean, they're going to be in the mix, you know?
Yeah, if I'm betting on this, it's certainly going to be on USA. I might take a small nibble on France. And I should mention, too, that I was reading the Netherlands at 10-1. It could be a dark horse in this tournament.
All right. Good to know. All right, let's get our final topic before we do the head-to-head. College hoops discussion. Talk to me a little bit about the recap from last week.
Yeah, a couple of things I wanted to point out. Number one, Kansas. Freshly new number one today.
They are number one.
Udoka Azubuike rolled his ankle last week during the number two Jayhawks' big win over Wofford, and he's out indefinitely. I read that Coach Self admitted that he hopes they can get him back before Christmas time. So obviously a big blow to the Kansas Jayhawks, and they went out over the weekend and looked poor again in a narrow win over New Mexico State. So something to monitor for Kansas. Azubuike is definitely one of their top players and real difference maker on their team.
Yeah, health really matters. Although it's so early in the season, it's not going to affect the tournament per se, but for final seeding and when they enter that Big 12 regular season, they want that big man on the court.
Our Nevada Wolfpack.
That's right.
Fans of the show. came back on Friday night in the second half to top Arizona State. out in LA to remain unbeaten. And then they hung on yesterday against the tough Grand Canyon team at Walking Stick again in Phoenix to stay unbeaten. This Nevada team is good, and those two were probably their last real tests of the regular season. And now they've got to be real favorites to go undefeated into the NCAA tournament.
You know who the coach of Grand Canyon is, right?
Oh, yes, Dan Marley.
Thunder Dan Marley, that's right. He gets to stay in Phoenix.
A Phoenix favorite.
That's right. I agree. I think this could be an undefeated team. It would be really interesting to see how the committee seeds them eventually, if they'll be a number one seed, kind of like a Wichita State situation a few years back. So we obviously, they're one of the darlings, Nevada Wolfpack. We love them. Hopefully they keep it up. And who knows, maybe a couple teams from the Mountain West will step up and try to nip at the Wolfpack there. The last game you noted is Michigan. Yeah, we talked about this last week a little bit. Michigan does hang on to beat Northwestern 62-60. I thought Michigan would handle them better, which is unfortunate that they didn't. But yeah, I mean, they play great defense. It looks like Northwestern's going to have a decent squad too.
Yeah, Northwestern's not bad. Northwestern was impressive to me in that game. They actually ended up shooting the best field goal percentage that Michigan has allowed all season. So something to be said about that, but that freshman, Iggy Brazdeikis, is awesome to watch, man. I tell you, I love this Michigan squad and actually jumped in on them to win the national championship at 25-1 a week ago.
They are the number one team on defense, right?
Number one rated defense, yep.
Quickly, I'll go over my information. It's nothing too exciting, but if you review the KenPom ratings versus the AP from this week, the teams that are the most overrated are Houston, Iowa, and Furman. Sorry, Furman. We love you. And the underrated teams are Purdue, that's your team, Iowa State, and Florida. Florida's way down there for some reason. I'm not sure, the pollsters aren't really digging Florida, but their metrics are there, so I expect them to kind of rise in the polls and see. I mean, they're in a tough SEC conference there, but I think they're going to rise up. What about your index, the Action NCAA Power Index?
Well, I knew that you were going to bash Furman again, so I checked in my ratings, and I actually have them at 26.
Ooh, so that's pretty high.
Not too overrated. Wow. Although, obviously, their strength of schedule begs a little bit to be desired. They did beat Villanova, however.
I know they did.
My Action ratings have Duke as the number one, and I'll mention again that this week they're 4 points better than second place North Carolina. Just a fantastic team, and they keep running opponents off the floor. I think they've covered in 4 out of the last 5 now. Although it's hard for me to bet them when they're constantly laying 34 or 35 points.
It's a tough one.
It's just not something I want to do. Number two, I have North Carolina up there again.
Mr. ACC over here.
I got to be honest, my eyes don't tell me they belong there, but their rebounding numbers are out of this world. And they play at such a quick pace. I think that's why they look so good, is because their efficiency is high, but yet they play at this fast pace. So over time, they're supposed to score more.
Right.
Number three, Kansas. Number four is Gonzaga, despite the loss. 5 and 6 are the Michigan Twins, Michigan State at 5 and Michigan at 6.
Okay.
The Auburn squad at number 7. Aforementioned Nevada Wolfpack, number 8. Virginia at number 9. And then a new team into the top 10, the Texas Tech Red Raiders.
I like the Red Raiders, but I don't see Tennessee in here. It's interesting.
Yeah, Tennessee is actually just outside the top 10 at number 11. So one of my favorite teams. I love watching that defense, but they haven't quite yet into the top 10.
I gotcha. Is it Nevada slipped down a little bit with those games, those closer games, and then Texas Tech jumps in. That's great. I like Texas Tech. They're always a good program.
Yeah, another team that I put in a national championship future on at 50-1.
Who's that, Texas Tech?
Texas Tech.
Ooh, all right. Look at this guy. Okay, so what spots are you in this week in NCAA basketball?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, there's not many games on this week. I think it's finals week across the nation.
That's right.
Shed a tear for all those college students studying as we record this pod.
They get a month off after that, buddy.
But true. Next Saturday, there are a bunch of big games, and I think between us, we've highlighted 6 of them here, so we'll run through them. The Crossroad Classic is one of my favorite events every year. It's the Battle of the State of Indiana. And one of the games that I would like to mention is Indiana versus Butler. I'm expecting this total to open up near 144, and I love the under in this game. I gave out the under in the Indiana game on Saturday, this past Saturday against Louisville, and it all has to do with this defense. They have been thoroughly impressive this year under second-year coach Archie Miller. They rank 22nd in adjusted D, where Butler comes in at 43rd. Indiana plays at a fairly moderate pace, but I was interested to see that Butler really slows it down 310th mm-hmm. in adjusted tempo. So I'm expecting this one to be another really tight contest, which also lends itself to the under, and add in that it's on a neutral court at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and okay. I'm going to go under 144.
Great. I mean, I like the handicap. We'll talk a little bit more about this in the head-to-head. We are going to pick this in the head-to-head.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, both these teams and Ken Palm are just right next to each other, so this is going to be a really good game. I like that the Crossroads Classic is pulling these teams together. There's some really good basketball teams in Indiana, of course. The other being, what, Notre Dame against Purdue?
Mm-hmm.
Not talking about that game, but that's a really good one. So the next game that we've noted, which we'll also pick in the head-to-head, is Gonzaga at North Carolina. This is happening Saturday as well. This is played at the Dean Dome in Chapel Hill. Looks like you like the over in this game. What I love about college basketball, unlike college football, you get these marquee matchups pretty much all year. I mean, these are all non-conference games, and then they go into the conference play. And it's just great to see these great teams playing against each other. And granted, it's early in the season. It's a measuring stick game. But they're not afraid because, obviously, of the tournament on the back end. But what do you see in this game?
This is probably my favorite matchup of the weekend. And I'm probably going to be going over almost any number that shows up. Mm-hmm. I'm projecting it to open up about 162.
Okay.
So I'm going to keep my eyes out for it on Friday afternoon. Number one Gonzaga offense versus the number four North Carolina offense. And there's going to be a ton of scoring in this game.
That's right.
As you probably know, North Carolina plays the ninth highest tempo in the country, averaging 76 possessions per game.
That's amazing.
And both of these teams are going to score and run and score and run. And I see it going way over 162.
Would love to see that. I mean, that's fun. That's a much more fun game to see. The next game we're going to talk about is Virginia Tech. They are projected in our system as a 9-point favorite against Washington in Atlantic City. It's not a home game for Washington. This is also on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
To me, as you've noted, Ken Pom sees it as a 6-point margin instead of a 9-point margin. So you obviously have some value there. What else do you see in this one?
I really like this Virginia Tech team. They have the sixth-ranked adjusted offense, but the major advantage that I picked out of their numbers is on the offensive glass. Virginia Tech is really good in rebounding, 69th in the rankings, but the big thing that popped out at me is Washington's rebounding defensively, 313th in the nation.
That's bad.
So, as you know, I really love strong rebounding teams, and combine that with the Hokies' really great offense, I think that they should be able to name the number against Washington.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they're 11 in KenPom, so, I mean, they're just way a big advantage versus Washington's, what, 51st?
Mm-hmm.
It's a sizable advantage. I mean, it's a neutral court, so we'll see what happens, but I like that angle. Another game that's big this weekend, again, they're not afraid to do these marquee matchups. Villanova's going to Kansas in Allen Fieldhouse. To me, there's no line again. This is Saturday. With Azubuike out, maybe they're going to be vulnerable against Villanova. I mean, they stubbed their toe against Furman early, but obviously Kansas struggled against New Mexico State this past weekend. Maybe Villanova can shock the world here, and you're seeing it as a 9-point line if you put it in the system?
Yeah, when I put it into my index, it looks like Kansas would be a 9-point favorite. But mm-hmm. as you mentioned, Azubuike could change that a little bit. I agree with you. I think that Villanova is going to be able to play them tough. We know they're defending champs and they have the medal. They're not going to be afraid of Kansas,
right?
That's for sure. And Kansas has really struggled at home. The weekend before this, they took Stanford to overtime to beat them.
Hmm.
And then, as we mentioned, barely beat New Mexico State 63-60 on Saturday.
Right. New Mexico State's a really good team. That'll be a team we'll watch in the future. They crushed New Mexico like 100-60 or something.
True.
But no, agreed. Kansas sometimes does this. They kind of limp into conference play, and then somehow a magic sauce is created by Bill Self, and they win the Big 12 every year. So.
Yeah.
So we'll see, but it's great to have these battle-tested games early in the season and kind of see where people are at. I got two other games that I was interested in. Again, they're pretty much all Saturday. Well, one Saturday, one Wednesday. Cincinnati's going to Mississippi State in Starkville on Saturday. And for me, the Bulldogs are at home. They're a rugged team. Cincinnati's a good squad, but Mississippi State's part of this SEC resurgence of the last couple of years, and I really like them in this spot. We don't have a line for it, again, but you're liking the under in this game.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I like Mississippi State, but when I saw you put this on here, I dug into the numbers a little bit, and I love the under in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these teams have really stout defenses and play at ridiculously slow paces. I'm projecting that it's going to be 132, and I'll probably go under anything that's anywhere near 130.
Okay, good note. The last game is actually on Wednesday. It's in a couple days. The line isn't out still. LSU is traveling to Houston. Yes, Houston is one of my overrated teams, but they're much better than LSU. This is a home game for Houston, and I do believe Kelvin Sampson's team are going to be good in this game. The Action Index has Houston as a 5-point favorite. We'll see where that shakes out. What do you see about that action?
Yeah, I looked at this one too, and I think that these two teams are pretty evenly matched. I agree that Houston probably has the edge. I'm not sure that I would want to lay 5 points, but I'm certainly interested in watching it as one of the only games on the midweek card that I'd be interested in.
Exactly. All right, well, let's get to our head-to-head to close this out. As we noted, Steve now leads 30-28-2 so far. We've got four games. We've kind of mixed it up. We've got both NFL and college basketball. Let's hit the NFL first. We do have the Thursday night game to start with, the Chargers at Kansas City. We both like the Chargers in the side with the 3.5, or 3 if you've seen it, hopefully 3.5. But we're going to talk about the total here. The total is 53 right now. What say you on that action?
Well, the injuries scare me a little bit, but going on a short week on Thursday night, I think that the defenses are going to be a little bit more difficult to prepare for these two offenses. And okay, I know there's been some sharp money on the under already, but I'm going to take the over in this game. We're going to grade it at 53, and Mahomes is my fantasy quarterback, and I hope that he puts up a lot of points. And we know that Phillip Rivers and that Chargers offense will do the same against a terrible Chiefs D.
Right, right. No doubt. The Chiefs aren't good, and they've gave up a lot of yards to Lamar Jackson. If Melvin Gordon comes back, then of course they're going to run the football down the Chiefs' throat. I'm looking at the under here mainly for really the other side of it. The injuries are actually going to hurt them in scoring. I think that both teams may actually not be as efficient as they normally would be with the short week and kind of the both physical matchups that they went through, especially Kansas City. And if Tyreek Hill is not on the field, I think that the offense is not the same for Kansas City. If he's limited, same thing. I think you see a difference with Kareem Hunt not on the field. So I do like the Chargers keeping it closer and a lower total.
Should be a great game. Can't wait to watch.
The next game we're going to pick is Green Bay at Chicago. Newsflash, I doubted you Bears. I'm never going to doubt you again. We actually saw that this right now the Bears are favored by 6 points. Originally, I looked at it as 5. It's floating up, which is not good for me, I suppose. But I'm taking the Bears here. I will lay the 6 points in it with Aaron Rodgers. It's tough to have Rodgers be a dog in any game, but to me, the Bears are playing at a very high level. They're going to play up for this game because they obviously need to avenge that loss from early in the season. And hopefully Mitch will be a lot sharper than he was on Sunday night so they can score enough points to cover this number for me.
Yeah, this is going to be a great game. When we first picked this out, I was a little bit unsure, but as we're recording here, I'm just thinking in my mind how I do really love the Green Bay Packers on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Their defense has been playing a little bit better as of late. They obviously stymied Matt Ryan and the Falcons on Sunday. And that Chicago offense just was very unimpressive last night. Mm-hmm. Trubisky missed a ton of throws, and it's clear that he was a little bit rusty coming off the long layoff. It's not that surprising. But you also add in the factor that the opposing quarterback is Aaron Rodgers.
Superman.
They're still in the playoff hunt, and I could see Green Bay rising up, covering this number, and a money line bet on Sunday.
Ooh, look at this guy trying to slap it in the face. What I will say is Green Bay has a very small chance of making the playoffs. So Green Bay has to win the game. But to me, the Bears, hey, Soldier Field, faithful, they're going to be out there in droves. So just like last night. All right, let's get the two games for college basketball. We already talked about the games specifically. Let's talk about the sides. Gonzaga's at North Carolina. We are grading it at a 3.5-point favorite for North Carolina at home. What say you on that one, Action?
I'm going to take the road Gonzaga Bulldogs, although this goes against my index a little bit. I like the way these Zags play, and Zach Norvell Jr., that sharpshooter, the lefty, mm-hmm. I think he's going to get hot and put up a bunch of points against this North Carolina defense. And Rui Hachimura is really going to bang inside a little bit with North Carolina. I talked a little bit earlier how Gonzaga plays a finesse game, and I think that North Carolina is even more finesse. Mm. So I think Gonzaga can probably out-physical them a little bit, and I like them to cover this number and maybe even steal one on the road.
Mm. I do like that the Zags have played on the road or in neutral games against top talent, and that's great. And I think the Zags actually could be the best team in the country when it's all said and done. They've already beaten Duke this year. But I don't think they're going to beat North Carolina in Chapel Hill. I think the fans are going to be out going crazy. The Zags are going to be a little bit worn down from playing Tennessee earlier this past week. And I like North Carolina. 3.5, it may be a rough, I don't know, it's hard to grade this right now without seeing the actual line. But for me, I like North Carolina, and I'm using the Action Index, and I'm picking North Carolina this game.
All right.
Our last game is Butler versus Indiana in that Crossroads Classic. Indiana is a 1-point favorite as we've graded. I'm going with Butler. We talked about how they play kind of deliberate style. They're a good defensive team. It's really a pick'em game, but I always like teams that are in this situation when they're playing their in-state rival that kind of gets all the shine. And as we know, Butler has been a lot closer to winning a national title than Indiana over the last, 10, 15 years. So.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm sticking with Butler, and I'm getting that point. And in KenPom, they're only one slot apart. Indiana's ahead by one. So to me, it is an even game, and this is really a pick'em almost.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a number of these matchups at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and it seems like every year Butler has Indiana's number in this game. And I wouldn't be surprised to see it happen again, but I'm going to be taking the Indiana Hoosiers. Romeo Langford has been really impressive the last couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and he's starting to show that dynamic shot-making ability in the lane, and they're still struggling at the free throw line, but I'm hopeful that the Indiana Hoosiers can ride that defense and really build a lead where the free throws don't come into play at the end of the game, because boy, are they bad.
Gotcha. All right, well, that wraps up our head-to-head segment and the episode 16 of the Side Action Podcast. Couple of notes. We're still trying to get some venues going for live events, but we may be out this weekend. I'm not sure. We didn't talk about it. Maybe we'll go out and see some games and invite the faithful out to check things out. We always like our listeners to join us and also win some money. So definitely let us know if you're going to be interested, but also let us know if you actually cash some tickets as a result of this advice. We'd love to see some tweets or some emails or whatever method. We're on Instagram too now, so mm-hmm. get us out there. Again, thank you for all your listenership. And you can follow me personally at Wegspool on both Instagram and Twitter, or in the podcast at Side Action Pod.
And you can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts. Definitely check out these picks and let us know if you're playing them. The Wegs Index has been incredibly hot. As you know, he's winning lots of bets himself. Mm-hmm. And this podcast has really been crushing it lately. And we hope you guys are using this advice to make your own picks and picking your own winners too.
That's right. All right. Well, we'll see you next week.
All right. Thanks, everyone. And appreciate the listens.
That's a wrap for this episode of the Side Action Podcast. We appreciate all of your listens and thank you for joining us. We'll see you all again next week on Thursday for some more hot picks and side action. Side Action Podcast, its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of this podcast, and opinions between talk show hosts may conflict. Individuals following the advice given on the podcast accept their own risk of losses from wagers made, as the Side Action Podcast, its owners, hosts, associates, or guests will not guarantee any advice given. The opinions and advice given on the Side Action Podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Intro and outro and transition music credits. Song titles, Jerry 5 and District 4 by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.org. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org/licenses/by 3.0.